Greetings and welcome to the 33rd edition of Dinosaurs, Science, and the Bible with Dr. John Nay, retired religion professor. Dr. John, we were talking, just finishing up the dinosaurs section of your program here last week. What are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to move on from those terrible subjects there to a very, very interesting area, at least an area that I personally find extremely interesting. Here a few weeks back, I went on a tour led by Russ Miller of Creation Evolution Science Ministries out of Flagstaff, Arizona. I found it extremely informative in that on this tour, I was given a different picture than what most people receive relative to the formation of the Grand Canyon, which to me at least made far more sense than the traditional tours, if you will, to Grand Canyon. You know, in preceding programs, we talked a little bit about you see a physical object and you're given a story for what you see. And if that story seems to make sense to you and your personal paradigm, your personal worldview, and it comes from a source that you consider to be credible, most people will accept that. Proverbs 18, verse 17, that says, any story sounds true until someone tells the other side. Well, if all you get is one story for whatever it is that you're seeing, whether it be the cosmos, whether it be the Grand Canyon, and that's the only story you're given, and it comes from sources, again, that our culture bestows credibility upon, if you will, most people accept that story as true. And of course, the story basically with the Grand Canyon, I purchased a book here just recently, and one commonality among the geologists relative to the formation of the Grand Canyon was they agree that it was formed to much extent by the Colorado River, at least this particular book I picked up. Well, is there another story for formation of the Grand Canyon? Is there another story that makes far more sense and basically resolves the conundrums, if you will, the difficulties for geologists relative to its formation? And I'm just thrilled this morning to have Russ Miller here on our program this morning, Dinosaur Science and the Bible, to share that explanation with you. An explanation, again, that to me makes far more sense, and an explanation that I'm sad to say has been meticulously censored out of our secular culture. And it's really, really unfortunate, because a person should be allowed to have all of the information relative to any physical object, and then they can form their own opinion relative to what makes the most sense. So this morning, Russ Miller from Creation Science Evolution Ministries. I hope I got that right.
You were close.
I was close. All right. You give me four words. Well, let's do a probability study on that. Four things in proper sequence. But Russ is going to share with us here a little bit this morning. And Russ, just lead out, if you will. You know, I understand you have a pretty controversial view relative to the formation of the Grand Canyon, especially relative to the time that it took.
Well, John, I do, as you know, and I by the way, appreciated having you on the bus tour a couple of weeks ago. I enjoyed conversing with you and just, you know, gaining some knowledge from talking with you. And I do have a view that is different from the secular view that's taught. But I have a view that's based on a biblical account, so I look at the canyon through a biblical worldview. But the biblical worldview's account of the Grand Canyon is also backed by massive amounts of evidence, as you know from being on the tour with us. And basically, of course, as you already pointed out, the old Earth beliefs are that the Grand Canyon formed slowly over billions of years of time. And I like to ask people, who saw, you know, millions or billions of years of time? Nobody. That's a religious belief. That's not a scientific fact. And folks need to learn to tell the difference between religious beliefs and real science, because secularists mix the two together and end up misleading everybody. But the way the Grand Canyon actually formed is that toward the end of the flood, the mountains arose and the valley sank down. And we cover this in our flood theory. But basically what the best viable theory is that the thin layers that were over the fountains of the deep, which had erupted to create most of the flood water, collapsed into the empty chambers toward the end of the flood, jutting mountains skyward and forming the ocean basins. Now, during this massive tectonic event that smashed plates together around the globe, the Kaibab upwarp was formed. Now, most people don't realize it, but Grand Canyon only goes about 1,000 feet deep into the Colorado Plateau. There's nothing spectacular about a canyon 1,000 feet deep. The reason it's more than a mile from the top rim to the bottom of the canyon is that the canyon cuts through the upwarp. The upwarp lifted up those layers, the Colorado Plateau, almost 4,000 feet above the rest of the plateau when the layers got smashed together toward the end of the flood. Now, this formed this upwarp, which is a north-south trending monocline, and it formed a
huge... You lost me on the word monocline. I know mono means one, but...
It's just a big upwarp. It's just an uplifted area. In other words, it looks like a mountain. It's just an area that was uplifted, and it formed a huge earthen dam. The Kaibab upwarp is a huge earthen dam. Now, that huge earthen dam then caught the runoff at the end of the flood, and it caught the runoff from the Colorado Plateau for somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 years after the flood. This formed this huge earthen dam formed these large lakes known as Grand and Hopi Lakes. Now, the evidence of the lakes are overwhelming, but the lakes would have extended up to almost to Salt Lake City, Utah. They would have gone into southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, almost over to Albuquerque, and throughout northern Arizona. In fact, if you drive north of Flagstaff 20 minutes, if you're heading toward Tuba City or Cameron, you're going to look around yourself. You're going to be driving right through those lake beds, and it's very obvious. That's the reason our bus tours go north of Flag to Cameron, to go into the canyon. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, you're talking about lakes of enormous size. Can you compare the size to something for us?
They estimate,
just how big?
John, they estimate that the waters held behind that upwarp would have held about three times the amount of water held in Lake Michigan today. We're talking about enormous quantity of water. Now, eventually, those waters breached that earthen dam. And when water breaches an earthen dam, it causes it to collapse catastrophically via massive water and mud flow. So once the waters either tunnel through or came over the top of the dam, they breach the dam and it collapsed catastrophically. And more water started gushing through that developing chasm.
Well, that's really interesting because, as I recall, I saw a documentary a couple of years ago, I believe on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, of where the myth, if you will, of Noah's flood came from, being the formation of the Black Sea, where for some whatever reasons the Mediterranean rose very, very quickly and breached an earthen dam and just dumped very quickly, very catastrophically, and formed the Black Sea. And supposedly, according to this documentary, that's where the flood of Noah came from, the myth of the flood of Noah.
Right. You know, you see accounts like that all the time, but what they're trying to get folks not to put their word and their trust in the word of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And as you know, the evidence doesn't back that up one iota. Mm-hmm. So, but what they do point out there are that things can form catastrophically very quickly by massive water flow. So once these waters breached the upwarp, they came cascading through. And massive water flow, and we're talking water flow 100 to 120 miles an hour most likely, lead to many catastrophic events. One is called plucking, which is the hydraulic lifting of large slabs of rock, which would have been tumbled and torn up in that water flow. So now, with the water, not only do you have water coming through the developing chasm, you have huge chunks and boulders that could have weighed tens of tons. Massive water flow leads to what's called cavitation. Now, cavitation is a real problem that engineers have to deal with all the time. Cavitation bubbles implode at almost 500,000 pounds per square inch. Think about that, 500,000 pounds per square inch. You don't want that coming down on your toe because that would hurt.
Yeah, call a tow truck. No, sorry, I didn't even say that.
Never mind. That was really good.
Well, thank you. Most people don't say that, but
You're good at this. Anyways, as with this water, you had huge boulders, you had all the sand and grit of this rock that had been pulverized by cavitation. And anyways, you had all this flowing through and eroding. It was like having a huge belt sander going through the upwarp. And most of the Grand Canyon was formed probably in 3 days. May have been as much as 9 days, but most of the damage was done very quickly. Now, one proof of this, and I'm going to give a lot of proof of this over the next couple of minutes, John, but one proof is that the missing sediments from Grand Canyon, and there are about 908 cubic miles of missing sediments, Well, they're not along the edge of the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. They're not down in the Gulf. If the Colorado River somehow flowed up and over the upwarp, which is impossible, the missing sediments would be along the edge of the river, and they're not.
As I recall, when we went on our tour, it was surprising to me. I'd seen pictures, but it was the first time I'd been to the Grand Canyon myself, is you walk up to the rim, and boom, there it was. There was no gradual erosion, you know, for perhaps miles coming into something that deep, but there was just a very abrupt edge, and there it was.
And it's just right there. As you noticed, the walls of the canyon are virtually straight up and down. Mm-hmm. That's indicative of very fast-moving water, not slow-moving water that would have cut out a V-shape into the canyon. Those steep canyon slopes and sides are much proof that it formed very quickly, and not slowly over millions of years of time. Now, also, one thing that showed real scientists, the ones that go by the evidence, not by the religious belief like the secularists do, the real scientists realized when Mount St. Helens erupted 25 or 6 years ago that, number one, strata layers can form very, very quickly. Up to 600 feet of very finely stratified layers were laid down at Mount St. Helens in three separate events. One was the ash fall deposit. The day of the eruption. Then there was a flow from the volcano a year later that laid down about 30 feet of strata in a matter of minutes, finely stratified layers. And then when it also, at the start of the eruption of Mount St. Helens, the north slope of the mountain slid off into the Toodle Valley below, damming up the Toodle River. Now, this was earth, probably billions of tons of earth from that mountain slid down and blocked up the valley, and over a two-year period, a huge lake formed behind that upthrust for the earthen dam. And I believe it was May of 1982, almost 2 years after the initial eruption, those waters breached that earthen dam and caused it to collapse catastrophically via massive water and mud flow. And in less than 3 hours of time, five complete canyon systems were eroded. One of them is called the Little Colorado, or the Little Grand Canyon. And this showed scientists how Grand Canyon formed quickly as well, and honest scientists started reevaluating Grand Canyon at that time. And that's exactly how Grand Canyon formed. In fact, we can go back to the 1920s. There was one brave geologist by the name of Richard Bretz who said, you know, the scab lands in eastern Washington, they didn't form slowly over hundreds of millions of years like geology was teaching at that time. But it formed very quickly via a massive dam breach of a glacial dam. Well, he was scoffed at. He lost his job. He couldn't get his papers published. His career was ruined because he was honest. He was a real scientist, and he went with where the evidence led. Well, finally, about 45 years later, in the mid-1960s, geology finally admitted the scab lands of eastern Washington formed very quickly in a matter of days via a massive dam breach. Now, that includes Grand Coulee, which is a canyon that's over 50 miles long, over 6 miles wide in spots, and over 900 feet deep. This formed in a matter of hours via massive water flow after a dam breach. I read where in Texas a year ago they had a dam that was about to overflow, and this was a relatively small lake, so they opened up all the spillways, and it eroded a canyon over 80 feet deep and about a half mile wide in about 2 days of time. In fact, in the news just a few weeks ago, there was a massive earthquake in China, and they had to bring in their military because an earthen blockage had formed. It was forming a huge lake where a river was blocked up, and they were afraid if those waters breached that dam, that earthen dam, it would have collapsed catastrophically and could have killed up to 50,000 people that lived downstream. So they were fighting very hard, 24 hours a day for about 2 weeks, and they were finally able to start draining that forming lake before it collapsed, the earthen dam. Collapses of earthen dam are catastrophic in nature. And this is, once again, how the Grand Canyon formed very quickly, not slowly, over millions of years of never observed time.
Well, Russ, you know, what you're saying now and what you said on the tour, to me, not being a geologist in any way, shape, or form, it just makes a lot of sense. And my question, why do you think we don't hear more about this other view? you know, if we have all these instances that have taken place and are taking place that attest to mm-hmm. formation of canyons very rapidly rather than the millions of years, why don't we hear more about this, generally speaking, on our...
Well, John, the reason is, and you know what that reason is, the reason for the listeners is simply that millions of years of time is the magic ingredient for Darwinian evolution. Mm-hmm. Now, Darwinism is so easy to refute, it's hardly worth discussing. I can destroy Darwinism in 7 seconds flat, and the DNA code barrier plus gene depletion plus natural selection, that's all it takes. But millions
that was
of years.
6 seconds. Go ahead.
So I was going a little bit fast. Right. I'm sorry. Okay. A little nervous talking on the radio.
Yeah, we forget.
I usually go a little bit slower. I like to give secular humanists at least a chance.
Okay. All right.
Well, anyways, to get back to the canyon, they have to claim millions of years of time, and dinosaurs in the Grand Canyon are their two foundational blocks, their cornerstones, to try to fool people into believing in millions of years of time. Sounds like you've been discussing dinosaurs over the last few weeks, so I won't go into that, but the evidence of man and dinosaur recently living together is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But the Grand Canyon is no different. They've mm-hmm. lost dinosaurs now, for any truthful observation. But they've actually now lost Grand Canyon. Not mm-hmm. only are more and more scientists admitting to its rapid formation, but the two old Earth theories, which were the ancient river theory and the stream capture theory, have been refuted scientifically to the point that, believe it or not, most people don't realize this, but right now, as of today, old Earthers don't even have a viable theory to explain the slow formation of the canyon. They don't even have an explanation. Yet our explanation fits the evidence to a T because our explanation is accurate. The canyon formed quickly. They stick to their millions of years belief because it's the magic ingredient, it's the foundation for Darwinism, and millions of years of death and suffering leading to Darwinism is the foundational philosophy for secular humanism. They can't lose millions of years or they lose everything.
Well, unless you can come up with something that sounds ludicrous on the surface. You're going to take that frogs become handsome young princes, if you will, and somehow you interject this god of time and chance mutations, and all of a sudden something that's ludicrous or a fairy tale has some kind of credibility to it now through the magic ingredient of time and chance mutations.
Absolutely.
How are we doing on time over here, Dave?
11 minutes.
We have a little bit of time here. You're awfully quiet over there. Anything you'd like to say relative to this topic?
You guys are doing great. Keep it up.
Well, John, you said millions of years is the magic ingredient. I thought it was a kiss from a princess, right? The frog and the kiss from a princess?
Absolutely. We dealt with that on a previous program. You know, God has given us an organized environment. I mean, he's a God of order, not disorder, if you will. And you're playing softball, someone hits a ball up in the air, that ball's going to come down unless something counteracts those laws that God established. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to causality, we see the effect all around us. We see the effect of the canyon, if you will. Well, what is an adequate cause for what we see? What is a story that is really plausible, that's plausible scientifically, relative to what we see? And the book that I purchased up there in the canyon, Russ, on the formation of the Grand Canyon, the various theories involved, I read through that book. And boy, page after page after page, they're confronted with something. They use the word puzzle. We're puzzled. They use that time after time after time. And again, if one would just embrace the biblical account, in particular, relative to the global flood, Genesis chapter 6 through Genesis chapter 8, and the passage that you alluded to, Russ, that the flood waters covered the earth as a garment in God's command. The mountains rose up and the valleys sunk down, and the flood waters rushed from the surface of the earth to the places assigned to them, never again to cover the earth. If they would accept that view of a global flood, and then what transpired in those years following the flood, and in particular, in this case, of course, the formation of an earthen dam and a lake of enormous magnitude, mind-boggling magnitude, you know, to have this dam burst loose and this to happen very, very, very quickly. I alluded to it on a previous program that if you were to hike down the bottom of the canyon and you were to do a little experiment and you were to put a stake down there in the riverbed every 100 mm-hmm. yards, you know, mm-hmm. 10 stakes, and you came back in 10 years, you know, what would you find? Well, you'd find soggy stakes. Anyway, you'd yes. find, let's say that you measured and you determined that the Colorado River had eroded the riverbed 1/64th of an inch in 10 years. Well, let me see, 1/64th of an inch in 10 years, that means each inch going up from that bed would take 640 years. Mm-hmm. well, you measure all the way up the canyon wall, and you're going to come away with, oh, this is very, very, very old.
Right.
Well, that's based upon the presupposition, many presuppositions, but one being that the erosion of the Colorado riverbed is consistent, the same now as it's always been.
Exactly.
And we, as you mentioned, we don't find that when you look at the overall picture of the canyon, the way it was cut, the vertical walls. When one looks at the north rim relative to the south rim and the stratification, the various strata, how they do line up, mm-hmm. not having erosion but clear strata. You take a particular stratum and it's even, it's nice and neat line. It's not all eroded away.
Exactly.
It just makes so much more sense.
You know, they're missing what they call time gaps between the strata layers of Grand Canyon. A time gap would be if a layer laid there for millions of years, like the old earthers have been teaching, mm-hmm. you would have rain erosion, wind erosion. You'd have plants growing into that top layer. Mm-hmm. You'd have rocks leaching acids into that top layer. Mm-hmm. Those are what are called time gaps. But there aren't time gaps between the layers of Grand Canyon. They were laid down quickly, mm-hmm. one on top of the other. And there are marine fossils found throughout all layers. They were obviously laid down quickly by water. So they've lost the battle over how the layers formed. And so they've been clinging to their millions of years of belief that somehow the Colorado River carved out the canyon. But like I said, the sediments aren't along the edge of the river. And also where the river enters the Grand Canyon, it's over a mile below the top of the rim. Well, water doesn't flow uphill. So they've got all kinds of problems. And like I said earlier, they've lost. They're scrambling right now to try to come up with a way to explain the slow formation because, once again, they have to have millions of years to get people to believe in Darwinism because millions of years leading to Darwinian evolution not only gets God out of the picture, in their minds at least, but it's the foundation for secular humanism. Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking about causality, and a lot of times I'm asked by well-meaning people and scoffers alike that if the Grand Canyon was caused as a result of the global flood, well, why aren't there hundreds of Grand Canyons around the globe? Mm-hmm. And John, that's a good question. It's a fair question, and it deserves to have a viable answer because Christianity is a logical belief. Mm-hmm. It's based on the facts. It's based on the Word of God and the facts He gave us to back that up. Well, I like to answer that question.
I'm
but
just getting ready to ask you that question, Ross.
But I want to ask another question first, and then I'll answer both. If rivers carve out Grand Canyons over millions of years, mm-hmm. and if the Earth is billions of years old, well, why aren't there millions of Grand Canyons? Mm-hmm. By now, every gully should be a Grand Canyon in size. Well, the reason and the answer to both of those questions is this. The Grand Canyon is very special because it took a very special set of circumstances for its formation. At the end of the flood, the mountains arose and the valley sank down, smashing plates together around the globe and forming the Kaibab Upwarp, where the Colorado Plateau is lifted about 4,000 feet above the surrounding plain. This huge earthen dam caught the runoff from the Colorado Plateau for probably 1,000 to 2,000 years after the flood, but eventually those waters breached that earthen dam and carved out Grand Canyon very quickly in a matter of days by a massive water and mud and silt flow. And it dispersed the sediments so widely that they're hard to find today. Scientists today have a difficult time trying to determine where those 900-plus miles of missing cubic miles of missing sediments are.
The book that I bought and read through, they brought that and the challenge out they had. And I just thought I Dr. Steve Austin, who is with the Institute for Creation Research in El Cajon, California, I remember watching his take on Mount St. Helens and what he had been taught in his geology studies, and basically that rivers cause canyons. But he found, looking at Mount St. Helens, that it was also true that canyons cause rivers. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I read somewhere that up to 6% of the lithosphere itself is composed of water, mm-hmm. you know, the crust of the earth, if you will. And you cut down in the earth just about anywhere to any amount of depth, and you come back, you're going to find water, mm-hmm. Even out here in the desert. That's true.
Absolutely.
You know, so anyway, that was just a side thought that just came to mind.
Right. In fact, at Mount St. Helens and Grand Canyon, once the canyon was formed, then rivers entered the already formed canyons and flow through them today. But based on the belief of what's called uniformitarianism or uniformity, which is like you were talking about the erosion rates today. They observe erosion rates today, and they extrapolate backwards, saying they've always been the same. And that's where they came up with the misled notion that the canyon formed over millions and millions of years. Mm-hmm. But that's prophesied in 2 Peter 3, verses 3 through mm-hmm. 6. People should read that. Uniformity is prophesied along with the fact folks will deny the global flood. Why would people deny the global flood? Well, because all old earth beliefs are based on the strata layers that make up the crust of the earth forming slowly. The global flood wipes out every old earth belief.
And solves the myriad of challenges they have in the secular
geology.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just
they can't figure out these things like Grand Canyon. Even today, like I said, they don't have a theory. Because they're trying to base it on millions of years, which never took place. If they would look at it through a biblical worldview, it makes perfect sense.
Just like everything else.
Absolutely.
In our lives, through God has given us this lamp into our feet, this light into our path, so that we don't have to wonder. We have a place to go to determine what is or isn't true relative to the Son of God dying for us. Relative to the physical earth we find ourselves on that God created in 6 literal days. Russ, I just want to thank you so much for coming down from Flagstaff, taking time out of your busy schedule. Where are you speaking next? If you got something lined up we could share with our local listeners here that...
Well, we're going to be, of course, by the time this airs, this will be over. We'll be in Tucson and Phoenix and Chandler and Mesa this week. But over the next few weeks, we'll be in, on July 27th, we'll be... at the First Baptist in Chino Valley. And I would say people should go to our website at creationministries.org and look at the events calendar because we do have a lot of things coming up.
And that website again is?
Is creationministries.org.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Russ.
Thank you, John. God bless you.
I would certainly like to thank Prescott Valley Christian Church for their support of this program. Also, Palmer Christian Church, Palmer, Alaska, for their support. I'm flying out Friday to go up there, looking forward to being with brothers and sisters up there again and sharing this very important topic. And thank you, Dave. And we look forward to sharing with you next week.
So it was a pleasure. John, tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing up in Alaska.
I'm speaking at a teen camp, a high school camp, and then a family camp, and there are three churches I'll be speaking on this topic, creation versus evolution, that all of us seated here this morning believe is just so relevant, so important to our youth. They're on the front line in this battle of secular humanism relative versus the inspiration of God's Word.
They really are, you know, and they need to be equipped with the answers to combat that constant barrage that they're getting in the schools. So you guys are doing a great job of equipping our kids and the adults as well with answers that they really, really need to defend the faith, as we're told to do in Peter. Listen, we just have we do have a little bit of time left. Give us the how do we contact you, John? How do people?
You can contact me through jnay@creationscience.net. That's my email. The website is being rebuilt as we speak here this morning. The forums from the old website are being transferred in. There will be a blog. Looking forward to that opening up. In the meantime, definitely go to Russ's and go there anyway after mine opens up also. And please email with your questions, and I pray we can be of some help to you, especially to our children, again, who are on the front line in this battle.
All right. Come on back next week at the same time for more of Dinosaur Science in the Bible with Dr. John Nay. Okay.
Thank you.
Very good.